Waking up. My first words on waking up are, "Is Linda okay?" My wife's name is Rose. I have an incredible headache, apparently the result of the little bits of skull at the back of my head being put back together with surgical staples. I don't recognize any of the people surrounding me. They're my wife and children. There are cards and flowers all over the room from people whose names I don't know. The last thing I can remember clearly is arriving for my first day of work at Landis Hemner Advertising in 1992. I learn a lot of things. I've been married to Rose for almost 20 years. We have two children. Apparently, I have a condition called lacunar amnesia, which means that a part of my memory is gone. It has a hole in it, like a giant donut. This condition, a favorite plot device in soap operas the world over, usually happens around a particularly traumatic event, like getting one's head bashed in while walking through the underground parking lot at work. It usually just applies to that one event. In my case, it seemed to have erased my whole marriage. I get released from the hospital. I go home, to a nice place in the suburbs that I've never seen before, and I try to play married with her. I sit with her in the evening and watch PVR. Stupid shows about stupid things. Rose drinks pink wine in a really big plastic glass, and I sit with her and read the newspaper while adulterers confess to the nation. There's a big mortgage on our house, and two cars in the driveway that aren't paid for yet. My kids, a boy and a girl, look a lot like me, so I guess they're mine. My memory of the woman named Linda is distorted. Not faded like an old photo, but messed up like one of those self-developing Polaroid images that got opened before it was ready. She is the girl I'm going to marry, and the woman who's going to carry my children, and the person I'm going to be buried beside. I worry that for her, I'm just some asshole who broke her heart after college. I try and figure out why we broke up. Nobody knows. Rose doesn't want to talk about her, though she does give me a little information during a commercial break. You're better off. One night, I drink a couple of glasses of Rose's wine and make a pass at her. She looks shocked and says, "We don't do that." After a couple more pails of the pink stuff, she decides what the hell and we do. It's remarkably unremarkable, and we resume celibacy. I can't stop thinking about Linda. It's delicate contacting someone you were in love with last week, but who likely hasn't thought about you in years. Weeks pass, and I cannot shake my need to contact her. I look her up in the phone book. I drive past her townhouse late at night, furtively trying to glimpse her through the curtains, which remain drawn. I learn to use Facebook and friend her. I spend a whole hour trying not to check to see if she's accepted, and when she does, I spend a sleepless night composing a non-threatening message to send her. I tell her about my accident and explain that I'm just looking to learn about my life. She answers. I message her back. I'm concerned enough to be caring, aloof enough to be interesting. She never married. She has no kids. She's not really looking to get into a relationship. Part of me wants to scream, "Take me! I'm married to a stranger!" I don't. I answer her messages regularly, but sometimes I'll let 2 days pass before I do. The waiting isn't agony. It's time for me to plan my perfect words. I'm not sure what I'm planning them for. I haven't thought that far ahead. Our exchanges become slowly more personal. We let our guard down a little, and I realize that we still have things in common. Today I'm sitting on a bench overlooking the lake, waiting for Linda to pull up. It's a beautiful day, and I'm sitting on the back of the bench with my feet on the seat. I know that my back will soon start aching, but because I'm a lot older than the 22-year-olds my mind is. I have a cigarette. I have cigarettes, but I don't light one because of the dirty looks I'll get from everyone around me. The world has changed while I've been sleeping wide awake. I finally asked her to meet me, and she quickly agreed, which was a surprise. When she arrives, I know it's her right away. She told me she'd be driving a white Mazda, and I spot her carefully tamed brown hair from a distance. I step to the passenger side of the car, and the window lowers. Her face brings on the return of my memory. It's weird how the floodgates open and all the memories are just there. I don't have to experience them sequentially, and I don't have to reflect on them individually and process them. I'm lying on the cold floor of a parking garage with the back of my head broken. In my fading consciousness, as if I'm in a dream, I see my assailant walking away. She wears a brown coat and practical boots and carries a garden shovel. Unmistakably, it's Linda. I know why we broke up. I decided that her relaxed attitude towards life, and most especially money and success, wasn't what I needed. I'd thrown her over for someone who I thought was more befitting of my status as a rising star in the advertising world. I remember standing at the altar, freshly married to Rose, and turning to the front of the church to see our families and friends, scanning to see if Linda was out there. I remember the on-again, off-again affair I'd carried out with Linda through the 2 decades since, how I'd gone to her after leaving the hospital when Adam was born, leaving Rose alone with the newborn, how I'd met her for clandestine dinners when I was supposed to be working late. I'd promised her that I'd leave Rose for her, knowing that I never would. I'd mistreated both of these women, knowingly. I remember the hopeless look she would get when I got up to get dressed and return to my regular life, leaving her with nothing to do but wait for me to call her the next time I felt like it. Fed up, she waited for me one day after work and caved in my skull. I can't blame her. I get into the car. When I see the look in her eyes, I know what's going to happen next. She'll keep up the act and drive me to some out-of-the-way place where the gun in her purse can finish the job that the shovel didn't. I decide that's fine and pull the door shut.